Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
The Cardinals are back from the winter meetings, where they did a lot of talking. They acquired one pitcher through the Rule 5 draft, and they set the stage for what could be a very busy few weeks leading into the holidays as they continue to receive lots of calls on their players and start to narrow down the asks that they're going to make to get back in trades. I am joined by Post-Dispatch editor Nathan Mills and a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball to talk about all the things we learned from the winter meetings and all the things the Cardinals have yet to do, which is just about everything. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and the podcast is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Joined this week by Post-Dispatch editor Nathan Mills, and we're going to talk about the things we learned about the Cardinals at winter meetings. Nathan, I'm going to begin by asking you a question that I asked Benjamin Hockman, and he was there covering covering the winter meetings for the Post-Dispatch for the first time in 10 years. He went to the 2015 one. Then we've had other folks kind of cycle with me through that, through the winter meetings. We've had a few years where there weren't winter meetings to go cover. And I wanted to get his sense of like what the feeling of covering the Cardinals at the winter meetings, how that was different. You go in 2015, they're coming off 4 consecutive NLCS appearances. They'd just been in the playoffs. They were bounced by their rival for the first time ever in October. But they were a contender. They were building. They were trying to reload. This winter, they were the subject of everyone's attention because they're trying to divest. It's a way different feeling. I wondered from afar what your sense was of that. Did you notice a subtle shift in the tone of how the Cardinals were discussed, how they were viewed, what the chatter was surrounding them, or even like in the comments that you read from our coverage down there?
Oh yeah. So, I think the difference probably felt like, the difference between being in Orlando and then coming back to St. Louis, right? You know, the kind of warm and fuzzies of Florida and frigid flurries of St. Louis, everything seems kind of sad in a way, when you talk about coverage, comments on coverage and things like that, they're sellers, and they are looking to move some guys who are fan favorites. They're appreciated. And that feels very different than I'm sure 2015 felt. As far as how the team is spinning it, though, this offseason feels different than some of the last offseasons, the most recent offseasons we've seen. Some fans felt, rudderless was the phrase I would see.
That's a great word. Great word.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the phrase that I would see bandied about a lot. And this, Bloom is kind of shooting it in a way where he's saying, look, things are going to be lean for a while, but we're about urgency now. We understand that the window is a ways away, but the urgency is there to get to that window as fast as we can. And that feels different in a good way. So I think, it's definitely a paradigm shift, but it's not all bad.
Do you think it is all, ask you to put on like your, we'll put the Cardinals down on the couch and kind of psychoanalyze them here a little
bit. Oh, God.
Do you think it's at all related to the fact of just where they are, in the sense that if they're a contending team and they're trying to make acquisitions that make them better, that might make them cagey, right? Like, we don't want to let on what we're doing. We don't want to let on who we're acquiring because, either the feel is, well, we're the smartest team in the room and we want to make moves that no one knows about, so we don't want to talk about them. And we don't want to like even clue in the fans of the direction we're going or overstate what we want to do and then fall short. The Cardinals have fall into that trap a few times, but they mostly are guarded about that, you know? But in this case, they can't hide from it. You know, everybody sees the roster. It's public. It's a little bit like, you know, when the Cardinals needed a cleanup hitter and the Marlins had three outfielders, and it was like, well, you can't hide from the fact that that's where you're going to go shopping. It's just a matter of who you end up with. You know, it's a little like that, only, you know, for the most part, they were pretty cagey. They were certainly over the last few years, they were very evasive on some of the things and not really publicly committed to a certain direction. It was more nebulous at times. I know there was the pitching winter where they said they were going to go out and get pitching, and they did go out and get pitcher. But for the most part, I wonder if just the position that they're in now, that it's easier to say the direction they're going, because instead of trying to strategically create a contender and surprise with a move, they're trying to prepare their fan base for the inevitable move.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, right? Is that, you know, you can look at this roster, you can look at the things coming in the next couple of years. And I don't just mean for the Cardinals. I mean, in general, you know, there's the Cardinals going all in on 2026 would make absolutely no sense with the possible work stoppage in 2027. So you kind of have this window where, you know, that this is going to be a time of preparation, and you can look at the roster and go, okay, these are guys who are too expensive. These are guys who may not have control beyond those years. Those are prime targets. And, you know, kind of know that that's who might be shopped or who might be moved. You know, I think the other thing though, is I think Chaim Bloom has been, I don't want to use the phrase transparent, right? Because like nobody is fully transparent about this stuff. It would be unwise to do so, but he's openly talked about, you know, who they may move, who they've talked to about moving, you know, those kinds of things. And so, you know, I think we've been able to cover it in more depth than I think readers and fans have been able to you know, take more of that in and understand more of that.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, just to not get into the weeds a little bit about reporting, but I think, you know, some of this is how the Cardinals are decentralized to get more input from places. You know, a sort of a hallmark of John Mozeliak's time with the Cardinals was a very small group of decision makers, you know. Time and time again, I was told either after the fact or during the negotiations and
during stuff, the fact,
how few people actually knew what was going on. You know, example of this is like sort of the Arenado trade, right? Like there was a lot of folks who knew what they were trying to do, but when they actually pulled it off, the number of folks who knew when that was done or how it was going to be done was very minimal. You know, it goes back to, you know, I mean, you can think about like the figurative symbolic story of the Cardinals about to hire Mark McGwire as hitting coach. And, you know, Mo got ready to tell his staff that this is what they were going to do. And then how they were going to roll out the news of it and ask them to hand over their cell phones, you know, so that there wouldn't be a leak. There wouldn't be someone who rushed to go say, well, this is what we're doing. You know, that's like kind of the symbolic thing. But over the last few years and really over the past stretch, you know, it really was like the Cardinals fed into a front office, a very small nucleus of folks. And, you know, Mo would make the decision, and what the ultimate decision was wouldn't kind of trickle out to the group that then contributed to making it, if that makes sense. And so there are times it might only be Bill DeWitt, John Mozeliak, and whoever they were talking to, free agent, or perhaps another team, that were aware of the move. You know, and until Mo let out the staff or let everybody know. There's been somewhat on purpose, and this is a good place to start because it was one of the things that I really got a sense of at the winter meetings, is there has been this like more people involved, more people with input, more people being brought back into the fold, more people putting in their piece to make a decision. You know, I mean, even Randy Flores, assistant general manager, and who has taken on greater responsibility and now and joked that now, you know, different people are calling him because he had been over the amateur side and is now over on the pro side and the amateur side. He's doing both. You know, he described how, you know, he called it a team and he said there's just so much collaboration between departments to just even arrive at who they pick in the Rule 5 draft. And Nathan, this is one of the things that I wrote in the paper and kind of used as a structure here for the podcast that I learned at this winter meetings, or at least I saw manifest, is the Cardinals' expanded, enhanced staff is also allowing them to expand and enhance the players that they can evaluate. They can look at a broader swath. I think that has to do sort of what we're talking about with the position they're at in their cycle of contention here, right? If you are planning to contend and you need a shortstop, you focus on these shortstops and you go get them. Now the Cardinals are in the talent accumulation business, so they have a wider lens, a wider spectrum to pull from. But this staff and the way Heim Bloom is coordinating it and using it is also allowing them to just evaluate a much broader scope of players and ask them to go through and find the best to then focus on.
Yeah, it's not just development, right? I mean, I think a lot of the reporting has been, and not just the reporting, I mean, that, you know, that's the nature of it, how much you build out some of this. You build out the player development staff. You build out some of the technology that you're using, you know, the infrastructure to help develop those players. But it's not just that. These guys are going to be able to go out and find players in other organizations. They're going to be able to find guys in college. They're going to be able to find guys in independent ball even, you know, who might be able to contribute.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not today. Maybe they contribute in a year or two. But if they find something that they like in those guys, they can bring them in, you know. And when you're at this stage, the nice thing about, you know, I know that it can be hard sitting in the talent acquisition phase, right? Watching a lot of guys come in and maybe not contribute for a while, or maybe flounder for a little bit while they're trying to find their way.
Right.
But, you know, the alternative, or not the alternative, I guess that would be a terrible way to say that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is you bring in as many lottery tickets as you can and maybe you hit. You know, I think that's kind of the idea. You know, we talked earlier, you and I, off the podcast about quantity over more quantity of quality, not necessarily one or the other. And I think that's kind of where they're headed. And I think you saw that, you know, Flores talked about the Rule 5 draft and the scouting process that led them to make their selection and how good they felt about it. That's exactly where that kind of thing is going to come into play. It's going to be Rule 5. It's going to be finding those guys who are, you know, maybe they've been DFA'd by another team and, you know, things that the Cardinals have kind of been bitten by, you know, in the past handful of years. You think of how many guys they let go who caught on somewhere else and became something. Now the Cardinals can be one of those teams finding those guys and turning them into something again.
One of the things that they did over the last few years, and particularly over, like, say, the last 18 to 24 months, the last few years, is, you know, they've really enhanced their pitching evaluation at the major league level to then allow for better pitch implementation and pitch crafting and pitch, you know, shaping and all those things that are now part of the modern game. And over the past year, they wanted to take what they were able to set up in the majors throughout the organization. Matt Pierpont's been a big part of that. Rob Serfolio, Larry Day has been a big part of that. You know, taking what Dusty Blake and his group, Dean Kekhoffer and others, have set up for the major league staff to give outfit them with an infrastructure for improvement and pitch shaping, to then take that to minor league development. And I think another leap that has been made, is the input that, like, Dusty would give on potential player acquisition is now more widespread. Right now, it's not just like we're looking at this guy for the major league level. It's like, all right, we're looking at this guy. We got the Class A. How does our group, Matt Pierpont and the others, what do you see as the raw material here with his pitches that we could bring into a system, and what could he be for us? And there's a way that creates more collaboration. Randy Flores used the team aspect. I would side with the fact that it gives everybody a little bit more ownership. They got stake in it. They can think of descriptions that they used to have with the star system in the draft. The Cardinals would outfit the scouts with a star, you know, gut feel guy. Like, all right, what is the guy that you feel is going to outperform this part in the draft? Who's your star? And they slapped a star on Trevor Rosenthal late in the draft and said, this is a guy, this is my star pick. And, you know, that had weight. And I think, you know, they're coming back around to that where, you know, they're doing evaluations, they have the metrics, they have the projections, they have all the things that every other team has. But what they also want to add into this is like, all right, who wants to step out? What's the scout? What's the evaluator? What's the coach who wants to step out and say, no, I believe in this guy. And here's why. I'm going to drop the star on him. And that's going to tilt the metrics a little bit, like bake that in to the number that their evaluation so that they can go, well, you know what? We got a guy who really believes they can connect with Brandon Clarke. We got a group who is really invested in this. We can acquire this guy and as a team take ownership of the development because the team got to help make the decision.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that you've seen, you know, listen, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the proliferation of talent and the acquisition of talent on the field, right? That's the nature of the game. You know, that's what people care about. But the fact of the matter is the Cardinals have spent the past 2 years accumulating talent behind the scenes. They've spent the past 2 years accumulating that talent and proliferating that talent. And now, you know, this is the big key, right? Now they're empowering that talent. And I'll tell you, as somebody who needs to feel empowered to do well in my job, you know, I think that's going to do wonders for their staff, you know,
great way to put it.
Yeah. In the past, you know, where you talk about, there's only a handful of people who know, if I were not in the know, I would feel not very empowered, you know, and instead you empower a scout, you empower Dusty Blake, whomever it is, you know, who you're talking to about this talent acquisition, you know, that's ownership, you know, to your point, but more it's power in the process. It's feeling like you're there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. And, you know, it's something that I've heard and that probably should have been the word that they used. And it's something that I'm eager to watch unfold in 2026 is the empowerment of pro scouts. Like what does that create for that, you know, just that culture, that interaction, that response, you know, the empowerment. I think it's something we all could watch and kind of see how that develops because it is a description that Heim Bloom has offered for what he wants to do for that group, both by expanding the support in place, adding a director position to even like offer more coordination to it, all of that.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's really good.
Field coordinators and everything else that they've done. And you know,
procurement director.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got, I mean, how many positions did they add in total over the past couple of years, the front office? Do you remember? I mean, do you have a rough,
I don't have like number? A direct number, but it's, you know, you got, I mean, it's a lot. The top of my head, you have at least five new positions that I can think of off the top of my head. And each one of them also has new direct reports. So it's not just one, it's sometimes it's three into one.
Yeah. Well, you talked about, you know, scouts and empowering them, you know, I feel like baseball for a while, for a handful of reasons got, you know, kind of almost too into analytics where you could just kind of look at raw data and go, this is the guy. And it didn't necessarily always work out. And I think real baseball people will tell you that there's a blend there. There's a blend between the analytics and the eye test, you know, and I think there are guys who are going to fall in a draft like somebody you could take in the eighth, ninth, 10th round that your scout identifies and says, look, I know the numbers aren't there, but this is my guy, you know, and when you start bringing that back into the fold, I think that'll be that. I think that's good for baseball overall, but I'll tell you, you know, the Cardinals organization has always prided itself on being able to find that talent in those places and having those scouts. And so, you know, just from a cultural perspective, I feel like they may be in a better position to make that transition back to that blend.
We're recording this at a precarious time for any podcast because, you know, by the time it hits the ears of our listeners, reaches our subscribers, it could not discuss a trade that has already happened. This is a wonderful time of year where you try to work on something knowing that it could change within, you know, 15 minutes or 15 seconds, depending on when the next text arrives from somebody who you've been trying to reach for days. But that being said, I want to talk about one other thing that I learned of the five parts of the story that I put in there at the winter meetings was, goodness gracious, is this a copycat league? Look, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of interest in Brendan Donovan. We know that more than half the other teams out there have at least expressed some consideration. I had one very sarcastic evaluator tell me that there were 32 teams interested in Brendan Donovan, which I took to mean that they were including the Cardinals, which of course they're interested in keeping him, but also the two new expansion teams.
The expansion teams.
Yeah. We're also wanting to get him. So
maybe they meant like a Korean team or a Japanese team or something.
Perhaps.
Tokyo Giants, maybe something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or the Savannah Bananas, some one of those teams.
Man, he'd be so good maybe for
that.
The Bananas.
Yeah. So maybe that. I'm not sure Brendan Donovan would be too keen on that, and I'm not sure about the talent the Cardinals would get in return, but they might get some entertainment.
Salaries there.
Yeah, entertainment. But there's a lot of attention. There's a lot of attention on Jojo Romero. You know, the teams interested in Nolan Arenado are slower to develop. Part of that has to do with, you know, the evaluation of where he fits with the teams. Part of that has to do with his powerful no trade clause. A lot of that has to do with the free agents still available and teams wanting to pursue Bregman, wanting to sign Suarez, and wanting to then reconfigure from there what it looks like at third base. So that can be slower to develop. All of that being said, it should not be at all a surprise that as the Cardinals got a whole lot of attention in Brendan Donovan and Arizona started to get teams interested in Ketel Marte, and the Tampa Bay Rays started to consider trading Brandon Lowe, that you also saw teams start to go, well, wait a minute, what could we get for our second baseman? What kind of return could the Cubs get for Nico Horner? Or ESPN reporting that the Padres were like, well, you know, Cronenworth, what would you go? Or the Yankees with Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah, Jazz.
Jr., you know, so you have, I mean, this is not a surprise at all. When the league sees like, oh my gosh, this is what the offers might be, or look at what we're willing to offer to get Brendan Donovan, what would it look like if we offered our guy up and could get a return? So that's what's happening. That is what happened at the winter meetings. Does that change the market for Brendan Donovan? I mean, somewhat. You know, he, by everyone I talk to, team, mostly folks with other teams, you know, they see him as the most appealing of the group. Marte is the best player of that group, or has had the best season of anyone. I mean, he's a runner up for the MVP, but he also has the most dollars attached. I mean, he's only, he's not even a year removed from signing a $100 million extension. Lau is with the Rays is a shorter term commitment, high dollars. Brendan Donovan is the mix of you have him for 2 years and, you know, you get him at primo value, and he plays a bunch of different positions, and he's a contact guy who can probably, you know, line a bunch of doubles. I was asked about him by a few folks, and they're like, well, what's his best season? And I was like, I wouldn't, you know, right ballpark, right place, wouldn't put it past him to be among the league leaders in doubles. That wouldn't shock me at all. You know, it's not the usual kind of route to damage. I mean, he's not going to hit for the same power as some of these other guys. But power comes in a lot of different ways, and leading the league in doubles is definitely damage. So, you know, that was something I found interesting and wanted to kind of explore, or at least explain to readers, is like, it's not unusual for other teams to see a frenzy around a player and start to go, well, what could we get for our guy?
Well, yeah. I mean, can you blame him? You know, I mean, we've talked a lot about the Cardinals kind of catching up, you know, trying to in this talent acquisition, you know, the race, arms race, you know, literally when it comes to pitchers. Right.
Yeah.
Other teams are doing that, too. And most of them have been doing it longer and better at this point, than what we're trying. So, you know, it's not a surprise. And I can't say I blame them, you know, but I think you're right that Donovan's probably the best overall option when you consider what he can give you at the price point he can give it to you.
Yeah. The Cardinals got to a point with some folks where they're at least starting to reach out and say, this is what we're looking for. This is what we'd like. You know, they at least one team, and I'm sure it's more, but I know it's at least one team. The Cardinals said, we'd like some time to kind of look at your organization, put this new scouting kind of apparatus in play, which we discussed, and see what it could produce. And they wanted time to do that, and the team was willing to give it. Cardinals circling back with teams saying, this is what it'll look like. This is what we want. This is the return that we'd like to get on Donovan. And that's where things stand. And it takes a team saying, oh yeah, yeah, we'll do that to make a deal. But teams are right. going to go like, well, no, how about we look at it this way? So that's where things stand with Brennan and Romero, really.
Do we kind of have an idea on a timeline on either one of those guys? I mean, I know Donovan's market is maybe a little hotter than Romero's, but it seems barely. Like both of them would be. Yeah, but not by much. But, yeah. You know, it seems like both of them would be relatively quick movers, I would think.
It just takes a team to say yes, you know, and so that's where we're at. You know, you've kind of moved beyond the exploratory to, you know, I guess negotiations, right? Like both. So that's where it goes. There's no, you know, talk to agents, talk to teams, you know, Chaim Bloom brought it up. He said, like, you know, it's kind of binary at one point. You either have a deal or you don't. You can talk about a deal constantly, but at some point you either have a deal or you don't. They don't have a deal. Do they feel like they're moving closer to a deal? They can feel that way and then have it come apart in the next conversation. Yeah. So it's far more nebulous than fans want. It's far more nuanced than news articles describe. So there's no real timetable as far as getting something done, except for there's momentum toward it is the best way to describe. Right.
I kind of have a feeling I know the answer to this question, but you know, you talked about this, the scouting, you know, the new apparatus putting together, hey, mm-hmm. this is kind of what we're looking at, what we want. Do you get a sense of what they're looking for?
Pitching.
You know, not. Yeah, well, I figured pitching. Is there anything else other than just kind of as many arms as humanly possible?
They would like to get pitching. You know, they wouldn't turn down another outfielder, right-handed option, you know, if they could get some right-handed. But they are really, over and over again, you just hear how they're just trying to identify and collect pitching. It's just where they feel like they're thinnest. It's where they want to get for the nimbleness of their roster. It's also where they want to be, you know, with the sweet spot of their development. You know, they feel like they have a strong depth of catching. They feel like they have some options, you know, emerging in the outfield, though mostly left-handed options, and they would like some right-handed thing there. You know, they feel like they have plenty of infielders. You know, they could circle back after trading an infielder or two and go, well, we'd like to have something there, but they feel like they're in a good spot there. It's classic baseball, right? You go where your pitching goes, and so they're going to go where the pitching is first and foremost. And if that doesn't work out, then they'll look beyond that. But gosh, almost every conversation I've had about what they're looking for and also what teams are looking to offer them, it's pitching. It's pitching, 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 and pitching.
And maybe they'll sign a pitcher.
They will. So they are. So that brings me to the next thing that I learned, and it's a great segue there, Nathan. Well done.
I definitely did it on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's counterintuitive, and I get this, and I feel for fans who are like, well, this makes no sense. Why are they looking to trade Sonny Gray and also sign a starter? Didn't they have a starter in Sonny Gray? Why not keep him? They must be shedding salary. Well, it's a little bit more than that. It's not just shedding salary. Yes, that's part of it, though they did send $20 million in it. So they're not saving as much in that deal as, say, they could have if they covered so much more of, or if they covered less of his salary. They could have done that. They could have found a taker there by offering less of his salary. But what they're doing is they're shifting the window. And this is something we've talked a lot about. I've written a lot about in the paper. It's been all over, you know, coverage everywhere, multiple outlets, just this notion of like they don't see 2026 is when they're going to win. They're not sure about 2027. This is not what they're looking towards, but they're trying to align their level and their commitment to talent and also their cost with when they feel like they could have a core, should have a core in place. And so if a guy doesn't fit into that, they will trade him, but then they will backfill to kind of get through. And that's where they're at. You know, trade a starter to get two pitchers who could contribute greatly, significantly in the next 6 to 8, 10 years. And trade a guy who's only there for another year or, 2 years, right? Go and sign the guy then that gets you through the next year. And maybe you can trade him too for somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting stance that the Cardinals have, is that they're both looking to trade players and then also backfill those players. And that's true with Sonny Gray, and that's true with JoJo Romero. They would like to get a veteran reliever for the bullpen, someone who has been out there, who is, you know, familiar, knows the rhythm, knows the cadence, can help young pitchers, can kind of bring stability. If that pitcher is left-handed, that might be even more valuable. Oh, by the way, they already have JoJo Romero. But if they can flip JoJo Romero for talent that can help them 2 years, 3 years from now, they'd like to do that and then go into the market to sign the replacement for JoJo Romero. So it's an interesting spot where they'll trade what they want and then go sign what they feel they then need. And I hope I explained it well, that, you know, that's how those two things can coexist.
Well, the nice thing about that too, you know, in terms of that sort of goal is, you know, how many guys are out there that are bounce back candidates, or they're, you know, the guys who are looking for a 1 year deal or a 2 year deals, or, you know, something with a year and an option or something, you know, how many guys fit that window, you know, to just get you through until you're ready to compete with your core. You know, that's a lot easier market to navigate, I would think, than some of the other things that you might like to see the Cardinals.
Absolutely. Do. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right.
And, you know, I think that's going to set them up well, you know, to at least weather this. I don't want to say weather the storm, but that's going to be the phrase I'm going to use of the next couple of years until they get to that point where they think they're ready to maybe open that window to contention. You know, if you can flip a couple of those guys at the deadline, if they do better than you think, great. If they end up being an Eric Fetty, maybe you haven't lost anything, you know, at the end of the day, you've accepted a little bit of money, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good way to look at it. You know, you got so many starters out there and, you know, a mix of relievers. I mean, there's still so many to be had. You know, you look at, you know, what's going to be the, I mean, Tyler Molly is an example. You got, you know, Adrian Hauser's really interesting. These are all names
I love, both those guys.
The Cardinals. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know where Nick Martinez goes, but he had a sneaky good season, a 35, so a shorter term commitment and a swing guy. Right. I mean, how valuable is that if you're going to have some young starters in there, to have a guy who can, you know, go 50 pitches every 4 days? Pretty valuable. Right.
Yep.
50 pitches every 3 days. Right. Pretty valuable. So, you know, there's a lot of players out there pinning, you know, kind of triangulating where the Cardinals are going with that has been tricky because of the number of pitchers out there. And also because, to be candid, you know, they're still kind of narrowing down their list. You know, they had some meetings during the winter meetings as a group, as a staff. You know, you would have had some of the field staff involved in there, some of the development staff in there, certainly some of the training staff too, and they would have discussed, all right, let's look at, like, we got this, all this information on these dozens of starters, let's start to kind of narrow it down and see what phone calls to make.
Yeah. And it, you know, one of the nice things about playing in that market and you know, going through those types of guys is that I understand that sometimes that can not feel very exciting, but I'll tell you, there are some exciting guys that fall in there. There are, you know, former top prospects. There are guys who have had, you know, legitimate ace type stretches, maybe not full seasons, but stretches. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as a fan, I would be over the moon if the Cardinals brought in Molly and Hauser both. I mean, those guys, they make sense. They have the floor, right, that I think the Cardinals are looking to buy. They're not looking to necessarily buy ceiling right now. They're looking to buy floor. And I think both those guys have great floors and potentially have great ceilings, where even if they're not in your window to compete right now, they are in your window to be able to trade them at the deadline or next offseason, you know, however long you hold on to them. if they perform up to the standard you know that they are capable of, you know, in the right conditions, and certainly you feel good about with your expanded staff and, you know, how much they've put into pitching development in the last 2 years.
Dustin, you know, May I think, is another one. May bounce back.
May would be great too.
And also, you know, a guy who you could look at and see if there's like mutual interest in sticking around if it all goes well, you know, because his age, 28, so he would fit definitely in what the Cardinals want to do as far as contending. Or you could, you know, have a deal with him that allows him to then go seek riches elsewhere if he bounces back. What the Cardinals can offer is they can offer starts. This is what they're offering, right? They can offer starts and patience. So that a guy who wants to bounce back, wants to prove his health, wants to generate value for that next move in his career is going to find the Cardinals appealing for that purpose, because they're not going to bounce you if you have a few turbulent outings. They can get through that. They're okay with that. They can allow some patience there, knowing that you might have three rocky ones as you bounce back, but then you're going to put together six consistent ones, and you're going to build through the course of the season at the same rhythm in which they want some of their young players to build. And they can give you that, as opposed to some of these other teams that, you know, they might sign a guy, you know, as a lottery ticket and say, we need immediate performance, and we're going to be very impatient. Like you might get one hiccup, but you
ain't getting two. Yeah.
No, you have a belch in your second start, you're out. And that's a DFA. And so long. And then you're in a completely different spot.
Imagine the boost to a confidence of a guy. And I don't know if the Cardinals have been involved with him at all, but imagine the boost to a confidence of a guy like a Walker Buehler, where he's been the last few years through injuries and trying to make his comeback in the season he had this year, bouncing around to multiple teams. Imagine that. Look, hey, we're committed to you. You're going to start. And if there are bumps in the road, we get it. We're going to work through them, but you're one of our guys. You're going to stick. Yeah. You know, something like that could be really appealing to a lot of guys who have, or at least had, big talent and may be able to find it again in St. Louis.
Complete honesty here. I get mixed reviews of whether or not he's a fit, or even would be there'd be mutual interest there. That you know, that could be a failure on my part to talk to the right person. Certainly, you know, getting clarity there has not been clear, but I get mixed messages on whether or not Walker Buehler is someone on their, you know, I don't think he's near the top of what they want to do,
sure,
even if he'd be one that they would pursue. But it is someone who I continue to ask about and try to learn about and see if the Cardinals line up. Just haven't done it yet. Which brings us to the fourth thing. It's almost like there's a logic to this this rollout of the things that I learned at the winter meeting.
Yeah, but also I'm really good at transitions. Don't sell me short here.
The alternative is that there's just a repetition to what I talk about, and I just put different themes on it and pretend like it's something new.
Don't tell people the secret. Don't let them know.
All right, I won't. All right. So just rewind. We'll redo that part of the podcast. You didn't hear earmuffs. You didn't hear that. It's the kind of pitcher the Cardinals are looking for. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of, obviously we could focus on the stuff part of it, the pitches coming off, flying off their fingers. You know, Matt Pusher, the 28-year-old right-hander the Cardinals got in the Rule 5 draft, you know, should not be a surprise. Look, he throws hard. He can bring it, averages, you know, that 95 upwards, and he can spin it. And he's got some really developing pitches that he's spinning. You know, Blewett, who the Cardinals signed to that minor league deal, working on a new breaking ball that showed great strides and will continue to work on that, could be a swing and miss pitch for him. These are all shared traits with these guys. You know, Richard Fitz brings a heavy, heavy throw velocity, and the Cardinals think they could bring out more in his, you know, off speed and his breaking pitches, which everything is, he throws his heart. All right. So we can see the outline of what they're prioritizing in the stuff. And it's not a surprise. A lot of the industry is doing this, if not all of the industry. What I really thought was interesting is the Cardinals are signing, acquiring these relievers who they believe and they want to get multiple innings out of. Richard Fitz, who they got from Boston, is going to get a chance to start. every likelihood he's going to be in the rotation when the Cardinals break camp for 2026. That is a real possibility. However, you know, at least he's going to be in the bullpen, and at least he's going to offer multiple innings. Same with Pritchard. He's going to offer multiple innings. You know, Blewett can do multiple innings. Murphy, who the Cardinals got in the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft, if we want to go down that route, coming back from injury, finished the year healthy, pitched this fall, did well, showed some things, multiple innings. This notion of having these, I've called them accordion pitchers in the past because they can either go long or short, and they can see how, you know, they sing in some, you know, and sometimes it's not always great. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it sounds a little clunky and sometimes it runs out of air, but they're accordion pitchers. They go long or they can go short.
That's good.
The Cardinals are getting these types of pitchers to create a structure around a young rotation so that they can have multiple long inning relievers. They already have Matt Swanson. They possibly have Chris Roycroft. You know, Ryan Fernandez perhaps goes into that. You know, Riley O'Brien's going to be more of the late inning, one inning guy. But their outfit, Gordon Graceffo, Andre Guarnia, these are guys with either, you know, multiple inning experience, or in Graceffo's case, isn't too far removed from being a starter. These guys are all looked at as multiple inning guys so that they can create and then churn through a depth that doesn't capsize the team if a starter goes four innings. They got a guy who can go in there, you know, give them cleanup, give them a chance to win, keep them in games or absorb innings, and then has options to go elsewhere. You know, Zach Kent is like that. They picked him off waivers. He's eligible for a fourth year of options. That's key, because now you have Pritchard, who's not. If you option him out, you lose him. But you have these guys you can cycle through, use to cover innings, use to bridge leads, use to do things in case the rotation has a week, has a series, because it's young, because it might see high pitch counts, because the Cardinals are going to be protective of them, where there's a series of four inning outings, a way to avoid the cascade of innings deficits that just swallowed the team whole in 2023 is to have these multiple inning guys on hand and create where manager Marmol and pitching coach Dusty Blake have been really successful in that kind of coordination of a bullpen.
Well, and you, I think you kind of nailed it in your story. You said the goal is clear: build depth, provide protection. You know, and that's what it's about. They're kind of circling the wagons so that they can protect these kids so that they don't ruin them. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we just talked about how many guys, you know, are looking for an opportunity to you know, pitch and not worry about having a bad outing. This is part of the way you do that.
Great point, Nathan.
You know, you build that, you know, backfill in the bullpen, and you kind of circle the wagons and protect those guys. And to your point, if they go four innings and it's not great, then you can get two or three innings from a Roycroft if you need that. You know, you don't have to rely on them going five, six, seven innings and just eat a bad performance. And you know, that's for the young guys, certainly that's key for their development. But for some of these guys they're going to bring in, it's going to be key for helping keeping them, you know, on task and keeping them kind of going forward.
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, it's both a buttress to avoid asking too much. This is something Chaim Bloom talks about. Like, you know, he doesn't want to ask too much too soon of the pitchers who they're expecting so much from. Quinn Matthews is the example, right? You know, is thrusting him into the rotation early in the season out of need is not at all the Cardinals' plan. They want to put him into the rotation when it's want, right? So there you have it. You know, it is creating that depth, you know, for to both protect the pitchers themselves, but also in some ways to the Cardinals' hope, keep the bottom from falling out of a season.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's a really good way to, if you don't address pitching depth in this way, it's a really good way to lose 100 games or more and just
crater. We've talked a lot about, you know, the way the Cardinals are modernizing, you know, some of their development and their staff and things like that. But this is a little bit of a modern approach to pitching. You know, the Cardinals, we've seen a lot of guys just in the past couple of years who, you know, would just have to eat some of these outings because the bullpen depth just wasn't there. As much as, you know, Marmol can do with a bullpen, and I think he's pretty great at managing a bullpen, to be honest with you. You know, if you just don't have the arms, you just don't have the arms, you know, and having a few of these guys who can go multiple innings and not having to only rely on, say, Steven Matz, you know, in those cases, I think will be a benefit for the Cardinals, not just in this year or next year, but, you know, keeping that as a philosophy going forward, having that depth to protect is going to be key too. You know, you're not just doing this for this year or next year. This is kind of the kind of thing you want to have, you know, in place.
Yeah.
Once you get Quinn Matthews to the roster too.
Very, very much so. And it's very, very part of the very, very, very much part of like kind of a modern bullpen structure and how the ever shrinking expectations of a starting pitcher is leading to the ever growing need for a robust and flexible bullpen. And that it's not the, you know, the eight names that are out there to open a season, that it's more like the 15 that are going to contribute at some point in time.
Right.
To this group. So, and all of that leads to the fifth and final thing. We could discuss many, many more, but I had to at least consolidate my list. Otherwise I would go on for another 50 to 75 inches.
Oh, please don't do that. I can't handle it at night. If you go 75 inches,
ouch, man. Like
we just don't have the space in the paper. That's the thing.
Yeah. But like you would enjoy reading it though.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I would just have to trim half of it for print.
Oh, sure. But then the readers can just spend their day just wallowing in the prose. No, right?
That's true. You could. It would wallow, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what the newsletter is. It's just swim in the prose. That's all. That's what the newsletter is. I think, you know, one of the things I saw is that there, you know, there's a lot of frustration from multiple fan bases. You could, you know, the Yankees, for sure, their fan base was frustrated. Lots of teams were frustrated because of inaction at the winter meetings. And I think I learned there is something worse than inaction there, Nathan. There is what the Mets did. Can you imagine being a Mets fan in the past week?
Derek, I don't have to imagine. My brother, I grew up a Mets fan.
Well, there you go.
How is that going? It's not going well. And I hesitated to say it because a segment of our listeners will probably not appreciate that very much. But yeah, it's not been great. I was sort of stunned to see nothing come out of that. Lose Alonso, lose Diaz, trade Nimmo. Just ugh, terrible. Yeah, I would hate to be a Mets fan right now. It'd be terrible.
What do you make of that? And is there a parallel at all with the Cardinals? I mean, those are three members of the Mets core that 2 years ago, a free spending, super aggressive owner was building around to lead them to the promised land of October. And now they're gone. And not only are they gone, but really don't. I mean, Devin Williams is already signed, local St. Louis kid, former closer for the Brewers, all-star, multiple time reliever of the year. So he goes into the, you know, likely goes into the closer role there, but you know, first base, it ain't gonna look the same without the polar bear there. You know, that's if anybody was gonna stay with a team for the entirety of his career, goodness gracious. I mean, Pete Alonso was on my short list for expectations.
Yeah, I thought for sure Alonso and Nimmo would be career Mets. Yeah, I thought they'd be David Wright type, you know, mythical characters, you know, in the history of Mets lore. I'll tell you, there are people who think that you know, this is part of kind of the transition. So when Steve Cohen bought the team, one of the things that he talked about was, you know, using his money to get back to contention and then building out the infrastructure to develop, you know, the kind of situation that the Dodgers are doing, right, where they can use the money, but they also have a farm system that they can take from at any time.
Sure.
There are some people who think this is the beginning of that transition. The Mets were able to make a couple of trades this past season where they didn't have to give up any of their top talent. They have some.
You mean like with the Cardinals?
Yeah. They may, you know, you mentioned first base, have to give up some of that top talent to get a first baseman from the Cardinals. But, you know, they've got some top arms. They've got a couple of players ready to go in like a Jet Williams type. So, you know, I think that that's maybe the transition that they're headed toward. But, boy, it doesn't look good a year after spending $750 million on Juan Soto to let three of your biggest stars, well, let two of them walk and trade one of them. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, you get a star back in the Nemo deal. So that's something. But I mean, Marcus Semien is a really good player. So you do get something back.
Yeah. But you get, you get him coming off a down year, probably maybe the worst year of his career. And he's,
yeah,
he's
after Nemo had a great year. So you're right.
Yeah.
You're
right. And I don't get me wrong. I like Semien. And don't get me wrong. The Mets probably have a second base hole. Especially depending on what they do with McNeil now, but yeah, it just it doesn't feel good. I can tell you that for sure. I mean, I would feel better right now if I were a Cardinals fan than a Mets fan. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, the Cardinal or the Mets go from just the euphoria of the trumpets welcoming in the, you know, Edwin Diaz for the ninth inning to I wrote to the sad trombone of a really, you know.
Yeah, like it'll just be a
disappointing winner. Yeah, that's how that sounded. Yeah, that was their winter meetings. Yeah, yeah, and then also, I mean, you don't even have to say it because you could probably guess what team signed Edwin Diaz. But now the Dodgers have the best player in the game, arguably the best all-round player in the game, in Mookie Betts. Though, I mean, I guess now you have to expand the all-round notion and Shohei's that too. And they have the best entry of any closer in the game. And remember, like, it wasn't too long ago, i.e. late October, that everyone's like, man, that is going to be the undoing of the Dodgers is their bullpen. That's going to be there. And then Sasaki took over and Yamamoto pitched every other day. And it wasn't the undoing of the Dodgers. But now they have Edwin Diaz and the craziest, most wonderful and delightful and entertaining. The only thing, though, is I do think that the Dodgers should do all they can to also acquire Mr. and Mrs. Met.
Because don't even put that in the ether. Don't you dare.
I think that needs to happen because they help sell that entry. I think that needs to happen. I think the Dodgers need to make a ploy for Mr.
If that happens, if that happens, I'm coming to find you. If Mr. Met becomes Mr. Dodger, you and I'm going to find you in a dark alley somewhere, friend.
I mean, why would he even change his name? Let's just get over it.
Oh,
everybody wants to be a Dodger, even Mr. Met.
Wow. Now I'm devastated. You have ruined my entire day with that.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, thanks. Merry Christmas to me. Yeah, that's exactly what I needed. Yeah. Second best mascot in baseball, and you want to move him across the country. Terrible.
Is that the tipping point for when, like, owners would be like, enough's enough. We got to really fix the CBA. The Dodgers are acquiring mascots.
I got to tell you, if the Dodgers acquire Mr. Met, the salary cap is going to be a problem for them because he's worth a lot.
Okay.
He's worth so much money, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. More than the Fanatic?
Oh, the Fanatic's number one. The Fanatic's worth more money. Yeah.
Oh, man. What about Fred Bird? He listens to this.
I know that he listens to this, and I know he's going to be upset. And I'm going to tell you, it's not baseball, but I like Louis more than I like Fred Bird. And I love Fred Bird, but Louis's my guy. I got a Louis behind me somewhere.
No, this is a podcast, so yeah. All right.
Yeah, there's a Louis right there.
No one can see that.
Oh, yeah. Dang it. Well, you can see it.
I can see it. I can also see all of our subscribers dropping off because you bailed on Fred Bird.
Like, I like Fred Bird. I don't want to not support Fred Bird. I'm just a Louis guy. That's all.
Well, is there, like, we'll close here. I mean, look, the Mets invested in Soto and trying to make a run last year. They collapsed in September. That's how the Cincinnati Reds get in, and the three teams from the NL Central appear in the playoffs and then disappear in the playoffs. I mean, is there a parallel at all? I mean, the Cardinals want to move some of what ostensibly are right now the faces of their franchise. They're at a way different point. They didn't spend a gajillion dollars to outfit them to win. But is there some cautionary tale here of either hanging on to a core or not committing to a core?
Yeah, I mean, I think there probably is, you know, somewhere, you know, I think there's a lesson in everything, right? At some point, you know, but I think the car, it's funny that too, though, that they're going kind of different directions in the way that they're trying to do it, right? Like the Mets seem in clear decline, losing their core of stars, which granted their core has been around for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Cardinals are trying to move the core to build a new core. So, you know, it's certainly they're trying to do maybe the same things, but it doesn't seem like the end goal is the same. It doesn't feel like the end goal is the same.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, there's a lot of pushback on the Mets about how they're being run as a smaller market. And there probably is going to be a lot of questions about the Cardinals is, all right, they've had some time here. And this is in the coming years. All right, they've had some time here running like a smaller market. When are they going to flex to be, you know, punch above their weight again?
And I have wondered if some of that is, you know, David Stearns, you know, running baseball operations for the Mets now. He's kind of used to operating in a small market and did very well operating in a small market. And, you know, perhaps that's the goal, is to try to operate that way, reproduce that success in New York or in Queens, and then, you know, sort of backfill with Cohen's money, you know. But so far, they're not moving that direction. So far, they've just lost the core without any real, you know, rudderless, like we talked about earlier. It feels rudderless.
They sure seem like they're gonna be a lot less fun.
I don't know. I think there are a certain section of Cardinal fans who would think the Mets will be much more fun without Pete Alonso.
Sure. All right, less entertaining.
He's a big strong guy. Okay, less entertaining.
He is a big strong man. Yeah, that is fair. Yeah, Stubby Clapp is gonna have to, you know, wrestle with a new Mets first baseman.
It might be Wilson Contreras. I wouldn't want to wrestle with him.
No, I would not. I don't.
He is also a big, strong guy.
He is a very mighty man. Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
And you've seen him after he gets hit by a pitch. He's mad.
Angry. No, he is. He gets furious.
I wouldn't want any part of that.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. Stubby should shake his hand and say thanks.
I bet he will.
Yeah. Yeah, or the Cardinals should just avoid, you know, hitting him with a pitch if that's at all possible.
Well, or just not trade him. I think there's a lot of fans who would want that too.
That is certainly something that Wilson is open to. He's been very candid about that. And he talks about wanting to see things through, and he's also a big comfort guy, both for him and for his family. So we'll see where that heads. That is Nathan Mills, editor at the Post-Dispatch. You can find all of the things that we do at the Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com and in the pages of the newspaper. That includes a video that we do of the best podcast in baseball. This week, Nathan took questions from the chat that went unanswered and quizzed me on them, sort of a pop quiz video to see if I had answers for some of the questions that were left over from the chat. That will be available at stltoday.com. You can also find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage from the winter meetings there. Benjamin Hockman and I were in Orlando, provided a bunch of content. That includes, Benjamin had a really good story looking at Ivan Herrera and his catching development, and some real candid comments by Chaim Bloom about what they did not provide a young Herrera in the Cardinals system to give him the best chance to stay at catcher, and what they are now providing him. Plus, Benjamin spent some time with Tony Vitello, the Giants' new manager, and a St. Louis native, and also some time with three-time MVP Albert Pujols, who is leading the Dominican Republic team into the World Baseball Classic. All of that is available. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review the podcast. I learn a lot, Nathan. I don't know how you feel about this, but I learned a lot. I actually checked this past week. I'm like, all right, I wonder what some of the reviews are on the best podcast in baseball, but I haven't read any new ones here recently. Some new star rankings, but no new comments.
Brother, so are you asking for comments?
Yeah. I learn a lot from them.
All right. All right.
Bad, let's get them. Different. Yeah. I mean, I am in the camp of read the comments.
Okay. Well, I've read the comments enough that I try not to now, but I'll read best podcast and baseball comments. I'm down.
I read the comments. I can take them. Sometimes I reply to the comments, but
I'm too soft for that.
No, man, I'm all right. No, there are times where a hypercritical comment, I'll be like, yeah, you know what? That person has a point. And then there'll be times where a hypercritical comment and I'm like, man, I really wish they would use less curse words and not threaten violence.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to leave all that in the comment. I meant to take that out. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. No, yeah, absolutely. Comment on the podcast. I learned from it. I mean, it's part of what's grown this community. This is episode 37 of season 13, which is far more than any episode number, which is far more episodes than we've had in any of the previous 12 seasons. So we're making strides. We're doing well. We're doing really well.
Let's beat it in 2026. Let's make season 14 even bigger than season 13.
I mean, there are only so many weeks in a year. So at some point in time, we're going to, you know,
we're gonna max out,
run up against it. But
we got some room.
But I guess then they will just ask us to do two a week.
Yeah. 104 podcasts a year. We'll just do them all in January and February.
Okay. Yeah. No, I don't know if somebody wants that much of me talking or that much of me arguing with Kevin Wheeler.
I don't know. I wouldn't mind it.
All right. All right. Well, I know Kevin is listening, so here we go. We'll have to get some stamina for those debates ahead if we're going to do 104. The Best Podcast in Baseball brought to you by Closet by Design. We'll be back next week with an episode right before the holiday. I got an idea for who to talk to just in time. And we'll see what trades happen. There'll probably be some movement to at least address. Can't predict the timing of the trade, but we just know that there's a snowball rolling downhill at this point toward the inevitable trade. Nathan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Derek.
Talk to you all soon.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com. Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.